by you, Morris. Good to see you.
Good as always, Phil.
Lovely. Well, it's one of your favourite times of the year, I should imagine. It's the Gadget Fest in Las Vegas, yeah. And also, I've been doing a little bit of homework on how ridiculously expensive our phones and things would have cost if it were 30 years ago. Let's talk about gadgets, Morris.
So, last week was the annual CES Consumer Electronics Show held in Las Vegas. It's been there since the 60s. It's the big, grand event that all the manufacturers or most of the manufacturers go to. It is where most of our new technology first showed itself, the first microwave, first video, and we can go on and on.
Yeah.
So, it's where the whole world goes to see 2.47 million square feet of exhibitions, 180,000 visitors. And last week, for the last 3 days of last week, a whole lot of people went to Las Vegas for what seemed like a really good show, but in many ways was a bit of a yawn as well.
Oh, yeah, because last year you were quite excited about it last year. You were talking about the Internet of Things, but why was it a yawn this time?
Look, I get excited about it every year. It's really good to see the stuff we talk about in some kind of physical format. A bit of a yawn this year because there wasn't a great outstanding product. We always go liking to think there's going to be one holy grail, one thing that we've come away with, no one's seen, one must-have gadget. And this year, like last year, didn't really have it. But to me, that is very much the phase that we're in. We've talked before, I think that we're in this adult phase of technology where we've seen a whole lot of stuff, been promised a whole lot of things, and we're in that phase where we don't quite believe it. People are playing with it. It's not quite true yet, and it might be one day. You know, that hiatus period is pretty much where we're seeing ourselves.
Have we reached that thing that I've asked you about before, where if we were to look at our period of time now in the history books, way in the future, we would say the 2000s plateaued. After the iPhone, the 2000s didn't come up with much.
No, I think it's the exact opposite. I think when we look back at history, we'll be amazed at how much we've done in the last 10 years as a human race. We'll argue good and bad, and we should, because not all the stuff we have done has been for the best. But we have literally changed what it means to be human. We've invented this whole new space called the digital world. We're running businesses in there, communication, love, family, food, all kinds of things that are happening in the likes of which we haven't seen before. And also the speed at which we are innovating or inventing has, again, never been seen. And the veracity, the sheer number of new things at one time we've never seen.
Maybe it's subtlety that's happening now. Maybe it's really big little things, almost like we talk about nanotechnology. But it's not like today we unveiled the wheel. Well, we're not seeing that
absolutely.
Right now, are we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what it's become, that we're all kind of over it. We've all been to the smorgasbord. The first few times it was really exciting, lots of new food, lots of things we could eat and see. And now it's just the same old ho-hum. You know, change the recipe, change the ingredients, but it's kind of the same. And that was really the CES. Lots of really, really cool, interesting things to see. But as I said, not any big game changer. The number one big ticket item, the thing that was there the most, were the good old drones. That was it. I mean, that was what took most of the imagination. And we saw all kinds of bits and bobs of drones, some really cool, interesting ones, some reasonably priced ones, a lot of them coming from your end of the world, remembering that most drones are still built in China. And one of the more interesting ones was one that was shown last year. It's come back this year in a new guise, and that is the manned version called the EHang 184, which is a drone that one person can sit in and be taken somewhere. So it's like
going full circle, though, aren't we, Boris? I thought the thing about drones was they were meant to do the dirty work for you. Oh, unless I'm talking about perhaps the ambulance one.
Well, this is part of its reason. EHang is really just meant to be a small helicopter. It's meant to be that autonomous vehicle, which it is at the moment in its incarnation. And the thing that I liked, or the story that I enjoyed the most, was that it had been bought by a lady in America called Martinez, a very, very wealthy lady. And she's purchased a whole fleet of these EHangs, not quite yet being able to use it because she has to get approval in the States. But her purpose is a wonderful one, and that is to transport organs to hospitals as they become available.
So this is becoming the real use. I mean, I said ambulances. I watched a video of a demo of that the other day at a crash scene, for instance.
Yep.
They're getting a real reason to be, aren't they?
And we've seen them, Israel has them as ambulances in the field. We've seen them being used in battle. We've seen them being used, unfortunately, when there are bombing or earthquakes to send them in before humans go in. So drones are beginning to find a purpose. There are really good uses for drones, believe it or not, in Australia and elsewhere, but Australia particularly, on the land, mustering cattle, doing all kinds of really strange things, but being very purposeful and useful. So they are one of those technologies talked about a lot. You know, people have and all the rest of them seem to eat a lot of the oxygen, unfortunately. We seem to be besotted by delivering a pizza. But the drone itself, really, I think, is beginning to find its purpose, its commercial purpose, and we'll begin to see it as quite ordinary over the next few years.
I was having quite an interesting chat yesterday with a fellow who does cybersecurity stuff with me, Paul Jackson, and he was saying that one of the big things upcoming is, it made me laugh, teledildonics, you know where that one's taken us, but the downside of this is, as robot technology improves, It opens the door to all sorts of creeps when it comes to replicating people robot-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know anything digital, it really only requires a euphemistic button to be pushed before there's a copy of it. And anyone that does something wonderful with this purpose will find there'll be another person who'll do something terrible with it. Absolutely. But again, as human beings, we have to decide if we want the good side of what this possibility might be, and hopefully put up some safeguards against the bad side. But we're not going to be able to, unfortunately.
No, we're not. It's almost like a whole new rule book needs to be written, and it never will be because it's impossible to implement.
Yeah, and there aren't any rules. I mean, that's a really big thing, Phil. There aren't any rules. This thing has not been around long enough, and as soon as somebody thinks that they've cracked it, in other words, stopped that evilness from occurring, found a way to remedy it, some little person at the back of nowhere is laughing at them because she or he has found a way around it again. Yeah. That's what we're seeing now. Now, Trump's having the big fight, or I should say he's staying out of it, with Russia, and America saying that Russia hacked the elections. We're going to see this conversation going on forever now in this brand new digital world.
Yeah. So if you could say there was one thing that might be of some interest coming out of this massive exposition, is there one?
Well, drones, as I said, was one of the big ones. The other big thing that was in was Alexa. Now, Alexa is the voice from Amazon. It's the Siri voice, the equivalent of the Siri voice or the Cortana. It's the thing that you talk to on whichever Amazon object is, and she or he talks back to you. For whatever reason, and Amazon seems to be just as amazed that people are so interested, Alexa seems to have become the default use, and Ford and LG and a whole lot of other people were showing things that were using Alexa. Amazon made the statement openly. They thought there'd only be about 30, 35 vendors that would use their product. Instead, there were hundreds this year. It amazed them. So it seems to be that humans now want to move away from the keyboard and want to have a conversation with their technology. And this, I think, is the big, if CES gives us any insight, this is the big test for this year. Is this technology really that good? And do we as humans really want it when we can have it?
So that, I reckon, is possibly what you and I are going to be talking about quite a bit this year. I can imagine off the top of my head, they need to make a voice that doesn't get people really angry, because Siri's voice isn't something about it.
Siri's voice is regional, so every region has their own version of Siri. We have an Australian one, Siri, and Alexa is the same. So there are regional versions of it, and there are also, there will be other versions that you can buy from actors and other voices you might know. But you're right, there is a lot of science goes into Alexa and the other ones, how she, he, it should talk, how they should answer questions, and the voice intonations they should use. Look, we've all used this technology. Some of it's really good. Some of it's banal. Yeah. We're attached to everything. Now, there are fridges that talk to you. There are washing machines that talk to you. There are cars that talk to you. There are all kinds of things. There was a watch there that uses Alexa, but in order to get it to talk to you, you had to press a button twice on the watch, and then you had to put your ear to the dial.
Too many processes, right.
I mean, I don't even know why you would bother, except for the sheer factor of saying it. So it really does go from the sublime to the extreme, but absolutely evident that that's where the technology thinks we want to be.
The other thing I wanted to mention, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but it was that perhaps back when the old ZX81 came out, or the BBC whatevers, they would have cost an arm and a leg, and I was doing a bit of searching, and in 1991, a gigabyte of flash memory, which is what, you know, the iPhone uses, it would have cost something like $45,000 or more. Today, it's around 55 cents. So, the mid-level iPhone 5, shall we say, 32 gigs of flash memory, 32 gigs multiplied by 45,000 equals $1.44 million.
Well, I get you one.
But that's amazing how who puts the value on the head of things.
It's just extraordinary. And that's one of the reasons we see technology going so rampant, is because once we find that we want something, then people work behind the scenes to make it better, faster, cheaper, and eventually just becomes default, becomes almost a throwaway price. I remember my first computer I bought, which was in 1984.
Right.
It cost me $3,600.
Aussie.
Which was a fortune. Yeah, Aussie. It had 640K of RAM, and I was told, I can still remember the salesman telling me that I will never, ever in my lifetime be able to fill that up or use it all.
That's incredible.
I also bought a modem with it, which to this day I've got on the shelf because I've kept all my old technology. I never used that damn modem. Never had a purpose.
What would your $3,000 Aussie be worth now?
Oh, that, well, not worth a cracker because you couldn't do anything with it.
No, sure, but, you know.
Typical prices, if you're asking, most probably now it would be a $15,000 to $18,000 buy.
There must be a scale here where the more technology develops, in general, the less expensive it becomes. I'm sure there are massive, you know, differences to that.
What about the good old printer? I mean, to me, that's the best example. When dot matrix printers came out, they were really unusual, the fact that we could actually print out a document at home. They were very, very expensive. Nowadays, they're almost a giveaway because where the money's made is on the consumables inside. It's the ink that they charge a fortune for.
Yeah.
I've got an office printer here, an HP office printer, that's worth, again, Aussie, must probably about $900. Its ink is running out, and it's going to cost me less to rebuy the printer than to buy the four cartridges.
I want to carry on this, Maurice, but let's do it next week. Obviously, lovely to talk to you. Maurice Misolowski there on the line, as always.